There it is. Thank you. Oh. Good evening. I'd like to call to order the Newtown Borough Council work session of February 4th, 2026. Agenda says 25.
Uh-oh.
Please stand and join me for the pledge.
Sure. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, thank you, everyone. Moving on to public to be heard. As a reminder, please state your name and whether or not you are a borough resident. Do we have any public to be heard?
Absolutely.
Please.
Gina Santoro, I'm from Giovanni's Fine Fashion, a business center in town. And tonight I'm here because I am a concerned citizen who wants answers. I have watched just today almost four or five accidents happen right outside of my store because of the way that this place has been taken care of in regards to snow. So, I know we have a borough manager. I'm being told that you're the person to speak to, Craig. I sent you an email today. I just copied everybody from the borough council, and I've received no response. And before you even reply, I'm not the only business owner that has happened to. It's happened to multiple people that I've spoken to. I'm here on behalf of the majority of the businesses. I didn't get to all of them today, but something needs to be done. And I'm just curious when it's going to happen. Are you waiting for a catastrophe, like a fire, where none of the fire hydrants are available to be used? And then what's going to happen is you're saying, I know you're going to say, we don't have the money for it. For 5 years, it has not snowed. Where's all that money that we saved on the snow removal there? Number one. Number two, I'm just curious if you're not returning emails, what is your daily process? What do you do during a day? Because from what I'm being told, this is kind of getting ahead, is that you've gotten a raise this year. I have seen this borough get worse and worse in regards to maintenance, and this tops it all off. I am at my breaking point. I'm in business here for 12 years and I have never seen the chaos that we have going on now. So if you're not going to respond to emails, I came here in person today to get a response from you to find out why we're in the situation we're in. Is it going to take a lawsuit when there's a fire on the street and the firemen can't get to the fire plug? And I don't even want to hear the excuses of it's the responsibility of the residents or the business owners. Because if I'm down the street and the fire plug's down there, I have to rely on my neighbor to dig it out. That's not acceptable to me. Because if God forbid something happens to my store, I'm suing the borough. That's where the money's going to come out of. So I'd like to hear from you exactly why this we're in the situation that we're in. Because you can't even drive two cars down the street. I'm not asking you to clean the sidewalk. I'm asking you to clean from curb to curb. I actually witnessed one of my fellow residents carrying a wheelchair over a lump of snow on the ground in the crosswalk. Do we need to be sued by the ADA? Like, what needs to happen for somebody to wake up and see that this is an atrocity, the way that this city looks? Thank you.
Can I just make one comment? Because I felt like your comments became personal, which I don't appreciate. So, on behalf of the borough manager and council, you have legitimate concerns. I'm not saying that they're not, they are.
Right.
All right. But when you say things like, what do you do all day? That's not appreciated.
I
When
just need to
did you
appreciate
email the borough council, the borough manager?
at like 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock
All
this
right. And
morning.
so you're attacking them for not getting back to you today.
In 5 hours, you 5 hours.
Well,
That's his
but
responsibility because
yeah,
I've been told
for
every
you or the
single day.
personal attack on that basis
There's
is
no personal. I just want
unreasonable.
to know as citizen, what is it that
I'm
you
done. I
have
just
for
wanted to say
emails?
that part I thought was unreasonable. Everything else, you make a valid point. Thank you.
Do we have any additional public to be heard?
Yes,
Yes, please.
I'm here, Regina.
from Stay Street Kitchen. And I just want to say, as a senior citizen, trying to just cross the street at the corners is ridiculous. Stay Street is a snow emergency route, which means you had ample notice of a snowstorm coming. Cars are not parked there because it's a snow emergency route. And doesn't anybody come and check the work that was done to see if it was done properly? I lived here 30 years. Once before this happened, a long time ago, I don't remember exactly when, but I do remember that there was a follow-up to clear the streets better because of such a poor job that was done. And we're losing business. Our customers are coming in the store telling us, sorry, Mish, you know, but there's no place to park and it's hard to walk around here. See you in the spring. Now, we already lost business from the detour, which has dragged on ridiculous amount of time because it's prime time for us, lunch hour, that people couldn't come, and people that aren't familiar with the area don't know how to manipulate the streets like we do living here. And now this, I mean, there's times when we're not even making payroll. So this is just, it's just our tones of voices, yeah, they're harsh because it's so infuriating to live in a community like this and for this to happen when you knew ahead of time a snowstorm was coming. It's not a surprise. I would just like to be able to walk and cross the street and not worry that I'm going to fall.
And take out the trash. Even the steps going from the parking lot to the sidewalk were never taken care of. Yeah. And the police tripping, taking out the trash.
It's inexcusable.
Thank you. Any additional public to be heard, please?
I'm a resident. I live on Liberty Street, and my son owns a business over by Isaac Newton's Handsome Devils, so I'm representing him and myself. I watched that plow, and our people on Liberty Street, knowing ahead of time that there was a snow emergency, moved their cars off the street so that plow could make an easy pass down and an easy pass back. He did not do that. He went down the middle, turned around, and went down the middle again. He plowed 4 feet of snow from my curb out to the street. Liberty Street is now one way. You can't get down two ways anymore. And if you do, you're going to take somebody's mirror off. That's number one. My son, who has shares a lot with Isaac Newton, they lost 5 parking spots. It's already bad enough to park over there because they plowed in parking spots. Literally pushed the snow to a spot. Now they're short, and their customers are complaining. Where are we going to park? Where are we going to park? And that's just the half of it. I almost slipped coming over here because I had to climb over a 2-foot pile of snow to get here and literally had to walk down the street so I wouldn't get hurt coming here. So I'm very upset, and my neighbors are. I try to get people to come. It's a little as late notice, so I couldn't get everybody here, but I know we're all kind of angry, and we, you know, it's not fun shoveling out 4 feet of snow from my driveway to get to the street. And that's what had to happen. And he had ample space because I watched him. And we have a Kubota, which is a small plow. That thing showed up Tuesday. Tuesday. The storm started Sunday. They should have been out there plowing with that Kubota Sunday, not Tuesday when it was a frozen tundra. And it was an iceberg that they took down the Titanic. It was frozen over. That kid just literally took the thing and went right down the street and did nothing, zero. So they're getting paid. They better think about that because the guy didn't do anything, as far as I'm concerned.
Thank you. Any additional public to be heard? Please.
For those of you who don't know me, my name's Ron Fesmar. I am now an employee down the street, so I pay taxes. So that's why I'm speaking. For 50 years, I grew up on Penn Street, and I ran a business out of the town here, property maintenance. I did 25 years to take care of the borough. Being a contractor for the borough, I kind of have an idea how things work. And I do remember several times in the past 40-some years where snow built up on the sides of the roads, just like it is now. The borough paid extra money to have that removed. Scott has equipment. Scott's all seasons. He's one of those plow work. He has equipment to come in and remove all of that without any problem. The chief today told me that all that extra money could have been reimbursed because it was a state of emergency. Somebody dropped the ball on that. Someone's responsible for making sure the borough runs smoothly, and someone failed miserably in doing that, not pushing this to be done better. If there's resources available to solve the problem, why does anybody know these resources are available and why aren't they being put in place? All this mess could have been removed. All these problems could have been solved without it costing the borough any more money. Where's the responsibility on that? Whose head does that fall on? I'm not going to point fingers because of your comment earlier, but I think we all know where it lands. All I'm asking is that you don't blame the contractor. The contractor was pulled from their job before he could do everything he wanted to because he probably got to a price figure and that was good enough. He could do more. He could do a lot more, but he was told not to.
So I will say that is not true.
He said he was done?
That is not true. No one told him not to do any more work.
Well,
did he
offer to do more work?
No, he didn't.
And nobody went to him and said, can you do more? Did anybody go to him and say, can you do more?
All I'm saying is, if someone is telling you that the borough or anyone from the borough told Scott to not do any more work, that is a 100% lie.
Well, then I will ask this again. Now you're done speaking. Did anybody go to Scott and say, Scott, can you do more?
Not that I'm aware of at this point. I know Tara has been in conversation with Scott over the last few days, as she is our emergency response person. I know that they've talked about clearing, and it's a matter of whether or not it's possible, given the adherence to the road and what kind of damage it would do to the pavement. Those are all conversations that are currently happening.
But it's Deborah's to put cones up and say we're good. The cones are there blocking traffic so we can park there. So
I know nothing about the cone.
You just walk down the street. Emily, you can see them all over the place.
I see them. I don't know why they were there or who put them there.
They're there because people were losing their side view mirrors.
They were trying to keep people from parking.
This is not going to turn into a back and forth. We usually don't address comments during public to be heard. But when you are being told absolute lies, I'm going to address that.
Okay.
So now we're going to move forward. Do you have any additional comments in public?
Just that as of someone who spent 25 years making this borough shine, it looks horrible. That's the only thing I'm going to say, Melanie, and that falls on everyone sitting at this table. You guys got to step up your game because this is somebody's yard out in front of you. This is somebody's home. $1 million properties. I saw this morning that this is Zillow's high-end real estate market for Pennsylvania. Newtown, Bucks County is it. And you look at the way the town's maintained, and it's not. You've got seven-figure homes going in there. My parents' house that I grew up in just sold for $800,000+. The guy's going to come in and level it and put two homes up there. It's an $800,000 knockdown. The money's here. Don't be afraid to spend it, especially when you get reimbursed for it. Thank you.
Do we have any additional public to be heard? Okay, moving on. Michelle.
Thank you. I have very little to report this month. You have my engineer's report in front of you. You can see that the Frost Lane sidewalk project is now finished. Liberty Center, we are waiting for another scheduled meeting with PennDOT to happen. And 110 North State Street, the subdivision land development right up the street, I have plans to take back with me for review today.
Okay, great. Excuse me,
can
I ask a question?
No, no.
I just want to
ma'am, know, we are out
process.
Of public to be heard.
Process. So when do our concerns get addressed? I'm just curious.
Tara has written your concerns down. We've already met, her and Craig and I. We agree with you that the ball really got dropped by the contractor for this storm. I've lived here my whole life, and I've never seen it look this bad. Mm-hmm. We are well aware of that, and we have already met to try to take steps to mitigate what's currently there and to keep it from happening again. Okay. So this stuff is in process. It's just not in process right at this moment in this meeting.
Okay. And so, and Gina, I
reach out to Tara at any time. Right.
Yeah.
I will also add, I do have a draft of a response to you. As I explained to others who I spoke with about responding, that I would be back tomorrow.
Okay. Well, we just need communication. That's the most important. Thank you for letting me know.
Okay, back to
Michelle. So that's my report. Does anybody have any questions?
Do we have a road program this year?
Yes.
Okay.
We will.
We haven't identified the roads yet.
Other than Congress, which is part of the Brian Gray.
Right. Okay.
So
we'll have to get together.
That's as far as we've gotten.
Okay.
And then an estimate will have to be done and have
all
to
that.
Be approved.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
And all
yeah.
of that.
I just didn't know where we were. Okay, thanks.
All right, thanks, Michelle.
Thank you.
Tara, mayor's report.
Okay, well, I think we've had some discussion about snow, and you made it clear that we're working on looking at what went wrong and how prevent from happening in the future and have to be prepared and improve our processes. We also have for you a special events proposal application for the car show this summer. This is sponsored by the Newtown Business Association. One thing council should know is that the applicant has requested or stated they want to change their date. Rather than the event being on 7/19, they want to have it on 7/26 with a rain date of August 2nd. This is so as to prevent overlap with the Doylestown,
I think they said Doylestown
car show.
Yeah.
So the other thing is, if you have read through, you will have seen at on the last page per chief that the organizers were advised of last year's compliance deficiencies and that there will be discussion at the work session. And that also that the proposal is approved by chief for Jefferson to center, not Jefferson to Penn. So chief is here, and are you the applicant? No. Are you the, oh my gosh, I knew that. Yes, you're the applicant. Yeah, sorry. And so I think at this point, council can begin discussion and asking chief and applicant any questions you may have.
So what were the concerns from last year?
As far as they used the borough parking lot without it being part of the initial permit, they had food trucks there that weren't pre-approved by the food vendors who weren't pre-approved by the fire company, inspected by the fire company.
Mm-hmm.
So there were some issues with some of the notifications that were required as part of our application process that weren't met. So when I did meet with, this is a new person, it was not the person last year. I did relate to him that Barrow had some concerns last year, and it'd be good if he were here to speak to the Barrow to address any concerns they might have. I know, Joy, you've had some concerns with locations, with porta potties, things along those lines.
Yes.
So that's why I asked him to come tonight so we can answer any of those questions the council may have.
Yeah, like the big thing besides the food trucks was, when you have a special event, part of the application is that they understand that they'll notify all emergency services of the event so they know when roads are going to be closed, and that didn't happen. So we got an email from, Evan at EMS, we got an email from Township, so that kind of stuff.
So with regard to the porta potties, where are you planning to put them?
So I believe the space in the back of this parking lot is the designated area for porta potties. Is that correct?
In the past, it's a location that's been used.
And I believe Jefferson, right here on the corner, I believe is usually one. And I think this one here now, full disclosure, it is my first year, and we did have our first planning session a couple of days ago, but some of the particulars like arrangement of porta potties, it's not something, unfortunately, I've had a chance to dig real deep into, but I did already get some feedback that apparently a porta potty was placed somewhere that it was not supposed to be, and the organizers it should have been our knowledge that it was not to be there. Is that correct?
I guess to
wait, first
let
all,
you know.
What's your name? Sorry.
Sorry, I'm Colby Reedus. I'm a Newtown resident. I've lived in this area for 15 years. I'm from Montgomery County originally. I've worked in Newtown as well for the last 19 years. I'm a mortgage lender. My office is right on 2nd Ward Street.
Okay.
So
now we can talk about porta potties.
Yeah. Okay. The porta potty issue came up several years ago, and I think since that time, it with previous organizers, it has not been the problem. They cannot go at the bottom of Green Street down here by the bike shop. That was the location that originally was offered. That you can't have the porta potties. It's right there by a creek.
Right.
So that's, and it's right by a public park. So that is not a location. The other locations that you mentioned, I don't have any particular problem with. I just wanted to let you know that bottom of Green Street is not a porta potty location.
Okay. This is not now. And I will also tell you guys that permit that was submitted. And I know like we again requested to get another pen and she met, we just copied last year. So it's not like I'm being petulant and saying like let me just keep asking the same questions, right? I didn't realize that. So as far as the layout though and where the porta potties are going is not in that initial permit, course, correct?
No, it's not. It's not part of that.
So as I get this together from my whole point is that I just want to make sure that I can communicate with you guys with plenty of time to get in front of this to make sure that something is simple and that should be as clear as where we can and can't put porta potties.
Can I recommend? Oh, I'm sorry.
There was an issue with the holiday parade in which they placed one in front of Stuckert and Yates, which Stuckert and Yates was quite concerned with. It was never permitted, and Stuckert and Yates was quite upset about it. We did speak to the organizer at that event, and they said they'll just have to deal with it. Not the answer we were looking for. I just wanted to be clear that everybody's going to work with. There has to be a set spot for the porta potty, so it's not to create any problems with any of the business owners. So. He was not the one that said he had
to. So can I recommend a layout plan that says this is going to be here, this is going to be here, this is here.
It doesn't have to be fancy.
No, it does not have to be fancy. You can use crayons. Crayons are fine. But mark the porta potties in blue and put the cars. No. But it makes it a whole lot easier if this application is going to be considered in 2 weeks, right? It would be very helpful to have that as part of your application to say, here's our layout. This is what our plan is. So we can get that discussed
It can be, you know, preliminary. It doesn't have to be
It doesn't have to be, right. And it doesn't, you know, you don't have to survey or any of that kind of stuff. But the other thing I would, I wanted to know is, are you planning food trucks?
So I'm so glad you brought this up. And the answer is yes.
Mm-hmm.
And I would love to clearly communicate and make sure everyone's notified and get permission to use the parking lot. Because there are challenges, of course, with just the space that we have and the cars. And
so that needs to be part of your application, that you're including the lot in your application. Yeah. But if you're having food trucks, we do have a food truck ordinance that was passed last year, and it has regulations and requirements in it regarding.
And you have to apply for that permit.
Now, there's a permit with that. There are two permits with that, actually.
Yeah, and the food trucks will have to then go through a process of getting their own inspections. So you may want to communicate with whatever vendors you're using and ask them. They may already have an approved permit to work within the borough, but you know, just ask.
So read the app, read the law. It's in our e-code. There's the food vendor ordinance didn't get incorporated into the rest of the ordinance yet. So it's standing under free laws and you can read.
Food vendor ordinance.
On our mobile website.
Mobile food vendors.
Yeah.
On our website. It's called Ecode 360. There's a link and it just goes to the.
Yeah. And then
and there's a tab in the left that says
new laws and it's under there. So, okay. But read it. There is a limit to the number of trucks you can go. Right now it's 4. So you need to know this.
Yep.
You need to know all this stuff in advance. So I would review all that.
And any questions? Can you communicate with Craig, Tara, because under special events with the mayor, and we can help you. We'd rather spend the time to help you and do it right than have issues like we had last year.
I appreciate that. And just a quick note, and I would like to keep this wonderful event a wonderful event. I'm not interested in making drastic changes. I'm not interested in my name and lights, right? I've been doing my job for 20 years. It's not the Angelo Laredes lemon. It's something else's name. I'm fine with that. But I want to make sure that we keep this, and I guess really the point of that is, I want to try to be as proactive as possible for the things that we can get in front of, recognizing that, I don't know if you guys give me some compassion, a little bit of grace here, there's going to be things the first time and probably every time I do this that maybe I'm going to miss, right? But I'm not intentionally, of course, going to ask for permission, and if I don't like the answer I get, just do it, right?
One thing to also be aware of with the food truck ordinances the council is discussing tonight, and just looking at their overall approach, and any there may or may not be any changes to it, or the council may make some decisions on it. And right now that's in process of discussion. So you still need to go through the application and permit process as it is laid out. But if there are any changes, we'll let you know.
Gotcha.
All right. Any more questions for Angela? All right, so we'll be considering this at our meeting in 2 weeks, which is 2 weeks from tonight at 7 o'clock at the Chancellor Center.
Okay.
So.
And would you guys like me to attend that as well for questions?
I would suggest so, just in case we have questions about, you know, whatever you send us over the next 2 weeks.
Okay. All right, cool. Thanks.
Thank you. All right, anything else, Ms. Mayor?
No.
Okay, moving on to solicitor report. Right.
Subtle transition there. our solicitor report was uploaded, and if there are any questions, I'm happy to answer those. But the main feature of the solicitor's report tonight is food truck ordinance, which where there was some discussion about. I know it was late in the day, but I also uploaded for guide, depending on how this goes tonight, the Commonwealth's guidelines on mobile food facilities. I'm assuming nobody had the opportunity to look at that yet. And also Craig uploaded the letter that was provided by Mark Days and the Historic Association last year and I can share this, about what the concerns they had with the special event regulations. I did take a look at the items that Josh raised at our meeting 2 weeks ago regarding the definition of a mobile food unit. While it's solid in that it clearly said it's about a vehicle, the inclusion of stands and kiosks in that definition is a bit confusing. And I think there was confusion for Market Days in particular, maybe some other events in that. But it is intended to regulate just the vehicular operators as a mobile food unit. So I would suggest that we remove the word stands and kiosks and leave it as is. Any other device is actually how this Commonwealth uses that terminology in defining vehicle in its own code. So a vehicle is a type of device under the state's regulation. So the definition would be any motorized or non-motorized vehicle, including but not limited to food trucks, carts, and any other device designed to be portable and not permanently attached to the ground, and ancillary equipment, et cetera, which lines up with the state's guidance on mobile food facilities a little more closely. I honestly, stands and kiosks, I don't know where that came from. and parallel to that, in the scope and intent section, which is just below that, I would recommend at the end of that first sentence, which is the provisions of this chapter apply to mobile food vendors and a host, as applicable, engage in the business of cooking, preparing, and distributing food or beverage with or without charge in public and or private restricted spaces, utilizing a mobile food unit. So I think it sounds a little broad right now that it's anybody who's serving food or preparing food, and we want to be clear that this regulates those who are utilizing a mobile food unit to provide those services.
You're adding those words.
I would propose adding
those
words.
Okay.
Yes.
I think that's, and that also helps clarify the stand kiosk.
Someone setting a table is not governed by this. They're still
they still have to go through like whatever
health and right. Yeah, whatever is applicable outside of that. But we're and since we went through this for a long time, but now it's been about a year. I think it was last March that we passed this. The purpose of this ordinance is twofold. One is to make sure the vehicles are inspected and safe for their operation, not from a health perspective, but from their vehicular operation and the flammable materials and the gas and the fire concerns that are on there, but also that we're not having that they're being set up in appropriate areas and utilizing appropriate spaces within the borough so that they're not interfering with health or safety concerns. As for the particular concern with special events, as Julia just kind of refreshed everybody's memory during that last discussion, one of the host permits available, there's two types of permitting under the ordinance. The one is a host permit, which is set up where the location is. Originally, we had it called a location permit, it transitioned to a host permit. That's who's hosting the food truck. It's a resident host permit, a business host permit, and then the special event host permit. The secondary permit under this ordinance is for the mobile food vendor themselves. That's the permit to have their individual device or vehicle inspected and certified to operate in the borough under one of these host permits. So for a special event, I would recommend that we don't edit any requirements related to the mobile food vendor permit, that they still have to be inspected and certified as a safely operating device within the borough. But given the concerns that were outlined by Market Days and some of the other things we've heard, I think it's up to council to decide whether they want to revise the requirements for a special event host permit or in what way you would want to do that. Right now, they're issued only in conjunction with a special event permit that they have to still operate on private property, or this is the one exception to the rule here, is within an approved area temporarily closed to vehicular access that is within the limits of the approved special event. There are operating times 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. with 1 hour of setup and breakdown on either side. Then no later than 10 p.m. and it restricts for up to 4 mobile food units at any one time. Now, the concerns outlined by Market Days and may be shared by some other special events, I think we're getting a preview of that. Market Days typically has 7 to 10 mobile food vendors. They now, I don't know if that includes tables and kiosks.
I didn't see actual, I didn't see a lot of trucks.
Trucks. And it also includes carts. So like anything on a wheel, that's brought in because it does cover it's those without the kitchen facilities are considered class one or type one and type two mobile food facilities under the Commonwealth. So they're like serving prepackaged food or food that needs to be held without temperature controls, basically, but it still has that particular aspect to it. And then type three and four are the ones we think of that are require refrigeration or heating, something to keep it in the safe zones, and or actual cooking facilities and kitchen on wheels. So I'm just using what they represented. That's it. You all know what happens in the borough better than I do. And then some of the other concerns were limiting the 1 hour setup and breakdown time. Market Days sets up at 7. And then I think some of the other ones about unsure of the permit process and whatnot were just the introducing this ordinance and this process to the public at large, and maybe there were some stumbling blocks along the way. But I think it's really about the number of food trucks, the time limitations regarding setup and breakdown, and then also they raise concern about insurance.
Too bad.
As the lawyer, I'm going to say we should leave that all in place.
that wasn't even part of my mindset on this. That's a no-go, non-starter.
That being said, if that is a no-go, and if, for instance, there wants to be some type of consideration for holding a special any special event having mobile food vendors to those requirements, then I would say we still require some type of special event host permit, but maybe there are certain other modifications or exemptions within the ordinance that are provided.
So one of the things that I noted on Market Day was there were different size food units or trucks. Like some were just like trailers where someone was serving coffee. But then you had one place was doing pizza. I can't remember.
There was a smoker.
Yeah, remember. Judy, do you remember if that was a truck or was it like a truck with a tent coming out?
No, it's a truck. The truck, yeah.
Okay. And then there was a, but the barbecue one took up, it was like almost like an RV style type. I mean, it was massive. And then it was being pulled by another large vehicle. So it was like taking up.
Sorry, can we please keep conversations in public? Thank you. Thank you.
So I guess my concern is that it's not about like a number per se. I mean, it is, but I mean, four food trucks the size of that barbecue truck, well, that takes up a lot of space and it could be, and depending on what street it's on, I mean, right. I know the streets are blocked off for these events, but I mean, there's not a lot of moving around space. A
bit of that is already built into the ordinance. The fact when you apply for the permit, you're required to provide a site plan that outlines where the food trucks will go to make sure that there's proper spacing and area for pedestrian circulation, not close to the buildings, along with trash receptacles, et cetera. So I think that it's a maximum, but that the intent was that site plan is still reviewed and determined whether whatever number of food trucks you're having, whether it be the four stays or goes, it's still arranged in a way for safe operation.
But someone could draw the picture not to scale. Or to make it look one way, and then when the food truck shows up, it's like, oh no, it's
required to scale. But
right,
no, it's an enforcement question at that point. I think for sure, and maybe that's a process issue on the backside to ensure that our ordinance is being followed. I don't know who's reviewing the site plans and everything at this point. I don't know
who reviews the site plans. Have we had a?
I don't think we've had it.
The ordinance for that.
Well, I had a question, and maybe you've already covered this, but I was looking at the food mobile food unit permit thing and looking at the two types of units, the food truck and the food cart. And I certainly understand the reason to have the food truck be with the types 3 and 4, getting all these inspections and all the rest of that, because clearly they're hazards, they're cooking. That was, and or they're maintaining a temperature, you know, the refrigeration. But the food cart, which is just dispensing prepackaged food and beverage, it felt like, why are we requiring so much inspection and all the rest of that? And was that something that we needed to regulate as much for, like in a special event, did we care how many food carts there were as opposed to a food truck that was producing food?
So I think that even though a food cart is defined as the type of food they serve, not necessarily the type of vehicle.
Okay, so it's still the vehicle.
So it could be something that is has far less complicated mechanical aspect to it, but it also could be a full-blown food truck that they just aren't cooking on.
I can't remember, I didn't review
the fee ordinance. I forget how we set the fees for this. I think there was an intention that there was a lower fee threshold.
It was just a fun number. Okay. It was numbers of units.
Oh, for the mobile food vendor inspection?
No, it was the host permit. So for the actual food permit, though,
I think we had it, and it might have gotten away from us in the fee resolution. But there could be, or there could be going forward, if you want to make that distinction of, you know, a higher inspection fee for the food trucks that require a more detailed inspection when they're serving food as opposed to a car. That was the biggest reason for that distinction.
Yeah.
I just feel like we're trying to reinvent the wheel here, as opposed to just the few small things we talked about. So like the two changes you suggested in verbiage, I think I'm okay with that. And then the only other thing that needs to be addressed is whether or not we want to somehow put language in there that allows council's discretion to make exceptions for special events.
In general, or to any particular aspect of the regulation?
No, just in general to the special event. If there's a special event that we've allowed and they're having food trucks and they need 2 hours to break down, okay, well, maybe that's an exception we'd consider. Or, you know, so just any special event in general, of course, not the insurance inspection, all that kind of stuff, but just, you know.
So for, you're saying for the five particular requirements under special event hosts, if host permit, as part of their application, they can make a request for council to modify those regulations.
If they want seven food trucks, or they need to set up, you know,
is it something that council might consider changing the four? Like the four was just, you know, there's a lot of discussion that went into it, but would council consider taking a look at, you know, market day, so they're not relying on, maybe they will, maybe they won't, every single year? Would council consider raising the maximum number so that they don't have to do that?
I just think there needs to be a way for us when it comes to special events, because we know how our residents appreciate them. We know how much business they bring into town. We need to be able to have some discretion there, in my opinion.
Doesn't council always have the option to change, like to attach conditions or make exceptions to these applications anyway without putting that information in the ordinance?
I'm always wary to encourage council to play fast and loose with their ordinances. It should be a uniform application or have it expressly stated that they will modify based on some type of showing. So, you know, if we were to put a modification provision in, I would say that, you know, they have demonstrated that they can safely, you know, that any modification is accompanied by a demonstration that the proposal can still safely operate within the spirit of the ordinance, as opposed to a case-by-case type of council will just waive.
Yeah, well, I'm kind of worried about, and I expressed this at the other meeting, like to have, we worked hard to come to four.
Mm-hmm.
And to say, well, it's four, but we have the option of giving you more. That just says, well, we didn't really care. That we have
to establish. But that's what a special event is. Special, it's different, it's unique, maybe something we overlooked. And to play hard and fast with four seems not fair to Market Day or somebody, an institution that's been around forever that is doing this.
Well, but the argument from the restaurant owners was, you've taken away our business by bringing in these food trucks. And we said, okay, so special events, they're going to be food trucks, but we want to keep the number low so that State Street Kitchen gets business, or the other places, or the ice cream store gets business, that they're not all relying and staying within. This, obviously, it makes money for the host of the special event to have these food vendors. But if the idea is to also be bringing in business to the borough, you're not doing that by saying, oh, well, if you're going to eat, you're going to eat over here. And, oh, we didn't have enough food trucks, so we need more next year. As opposed to saying, well, then that meant that these other restaurants got more business.
I understand that's how you feel, but I mean, I'm feeling like the majority of us would like to be able to have that discretion,
particularly for an event that has occurred in the past a number of times.
But food trucks are new for that event.
We've had food trucks for years.
Well, we had the popcorn truck and we had a couple things, but to have the things on the street around past Patriots Park, that's relatively new.
So in my mind, it's about area, like how much area is being closed off because it's a safety concern. Like if you have a higher pedestrian flow area, I think you can allow for more trucks. So I don't know. So for me personally, I would like to build something like that into the ordinance.
We're trying to reinvent the wheel here. That's already taken care of because they have to submit site plans. So we already know that.
So if they requested a modification, right, they would have the option to review anything to see if they have justified the increase, right, or you feel comfortable with it.
Similar to like a special exception under zoning, right? So under some zoning codes, right? You can have this many square feet, but you can have more square feet as a special exception application, provided that you meet a certain set of standards, which allows allows, we're using the word discretion. It's not, probably not legally discretion, but it has to satisfy council that you've met those standards. And so that's really what we're talking about here.
Mm-hmm.
Something very similar.
If we just took out the number for special events altogether, like no guidance on that, and said just present us with your plans, then could it be a case-by-case basis?
Well, that's what this would be anyway.
Yeah, I think to give them no number, and somebody shows up and wants to put...
And it might not just be the number that they're asking to change. It might be the start time, the end time. It might be how much time they need to set up, how much time they need to break down.
I like the fact that there's a number, right? Because there needs to be a standard. I like the fact that there's other conditions that need to be standards. We need to have that exception language that allows us to consider the uniqueness of the application and their ability to meet our standards.
Okay, so
I defer to you.
Well, no,
I think that's fine. I think we can for
2 weeks. We'll see some language before that. We can changes to the ordinance.
Yes.
Okay.
No, that's fine.
Okay.
So would it be for you would want language or mocked up draft changes for discussion, or we'll mock it up and put it on as an agenda item for authorization to advertise, or how would council want to go?
I mean, I think
because this is not zoning anymore, so it's only a 7-day leeway we can have.
I mean, I don't see why we couldn't vote to advertise. It's not a massive change. It's not going to take us a lot to review it. I mean, it's a few sentences.
Sure. I'll provide that as far in advance as possible.
Okay, great. All right. Anything else? Any questions for Greg on the report? Okay. Greg, manager's report.
Thank you. I don't have anything specific. I did submit the report for the month of January and February, and if there's any questions on that, other than to say that, again, there's a lot going on with the end of the year financials reports, and everything is in order so far, so nothing unusual or out of concern. And unless there's any questions for me.
Okay, thank you. Moving on to my report, but I don't have anything to report that we haven't already discussed. Same thing with agenda items for the February 18th meeting. They're kind of all over the agenda already. So moving on to EAC.
I should have mentioned this maybe in those before, but with respect to the agenda for the 18th, I do want to bring up some discussions I've had with Joint Historic Commission and ARB to an extent too.
Okay.
If you remember the letter the Joint Historic Commission wrote, I guess.
Can we do that?
A few weeks ago, right?
Old business?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, all right, thanks. Because I know we have someone here to speak for EAC, so I don't want to keep them.
Great.
All right, Julia.
Wanted to have a little bit of a discussion with council regarding the LCAP presentation that happened 2 weeks ago, to get some feedback, maybe explain a little bit more where we are in this. I know it was a lot of information that was thrown at council. We've been working hard. I'm glad to see Tim is here so he can help me stumble through this. So Craig and Tim and I and Summerbound are the representatives of the borough, meeting with the two students from Penn State and their professors to develop this local climate action plan. And what you saw 2 weeks ago was their first required presentation, which is they had to do all the background to get a baseline of our where all of our, I guess it's carbon dioxide equivalents are being created. So what is the state of our climate and what's happening right now? And then given that information, then they have to go off and do research, and we talk to them about what the borough might be interested in terms of ways to reduce that, I guess that impact on our climate, I should put it that way. So first I wanted to ask if there were any questions that were on your mind after the presentation. Let's start with that. And then I'm gonna let Tim talk about what we're doing based on it. Sorry about that there.
Yeah.
So were there any questions, anything that struck out with the presentation? And we did get back to them to say, you know, we'd really like a little bit more information about how we compare to other municipalities that are of similar size. And we also have started working with them about, well, all right, given this stuff, like what kind of plans are other municipalities putting together? That's information that we're starting to gather. So, Tim, do you want to give an update on where we are with our other
meetings? It's actually been great. You know, working with the state and, you know, the students are very eager and, you know, they're working hard putting together this initial inventory of, you know, what the emissions look like for the borough. And not surprisingly, right, it's residential energy is the number one, followed by commercial energy and transportation. So, again, no real surprises there, but what we're working with them on now is looking at a bunch of different ideas, different options that we can offer to residents of the borough and business owners to maybe help them become more energy efficient. And that's really the point we're trying to make here. This isn't about reducing, you know, carbon emissions, because, you know, it's like, who really cares about that, you know, if you're a resident? It's really more about, if I can make my home or business a little bit more energy efficient, I can save some money, right? So we're looking at things through that angle as well, to, you know, try to make it, you know, enticing for them to, you know, to end up lowering submissions in town. So we're still really early on. You know, we've had a few meetings with the students and the professors. They've been doing this for about 6 years now, so they've worked with a lot of towns, cities. So we're getting examples of what's already been done and what's already worked and what hasn't worked. Again, we're hoping to get all of your support in moving forward on this. We don't have any specifics at this point, but that'll be coming in the spring.
Ask a question?
Yeah, of course.
So you're saying they've been doing it for 6 or 7 years. They're students. They talked about fall semester, spring semester. So are they graduate students at the end of a 6 or 7 year program? Or is it you get the new students each year, and Penn State's been doing it about 6 or 7 years?
Exactly. So, you know, Penn State has been working with the DEP in Pennsylvania for the past 6 years on this program. And, they're working individually with, you know, different communities. I think it was about, you know, I think there were 6 different municipalities this year that were part of the program.
Great. Have they completed this program in other cities? Like you said, sort of, you know, 6 or 7 years ago, with recommendations. And what have been the typical recommendations that have come through?
You know, it's funny because we asked the same question. Right? You know, is there a playbook here that we can just follow? And that, sort of, you know, I think that different municipalities had like different goals in mind going into it, and different issues that they were trying to address. And I mean, it's everything from, you know, like community solar programs to, just energy efficiency in buildings and, you know, that sort of thing. So there are a bunch of different, options that we can take a look at. And that's what we've asked them to do, is just, you know, start sharing with us and sharing with us the stuff that's actually worked.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, you can put together like this, like, real nice looking climate action plan, but, you know, if it doesn't accomplish anything, what's the point? Right? So, I'm more interested in the practicality, the practical things that actually have worked.
Thank you. Thanks, Tim, for coming. And anything else on this topic?
No, anybody has any questions? So we will be sharing more things. So as we get more information, we're currently, I guess we're really just mostly brainstorming at this point about what kinds of areas you can look at, and then we send the students off to do their research and then come back, and then they say, oh, well, we found this, we found that, and then we say, oh, well, what about this, and then they go scurry off and do some other work. So they're hoping to have something, a step before their spring break,
So sometime in, I guess, in the next month and a half, we should be seeing the next little something that we can share. But I don't think you do it. We don't get another presentation from them until the whole report is done, and then they come back and present that, I believe, to the borough.
I think the deliverable from their standpoint, it's not that these, you know, these students, it's part of their coursework for graduating. So we will get a climate action plan for the borough. And you know, that would be a formal deliverable by by the springtime.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks, Julia.
Sure. Now I had a second topic under Environmental Advisory Council. I don't know if I should do it now or later.
Which one?
The grant.
Yeah, this is a native plants grant that just came across our desk.
Go ahead.
I do it now. Okay, so the as I mentioned in my little EAC report at our last meeting, the EAC is looking at a public educational activity in the spring that would involve container plantings with native plants. So as a way to expand, you know, even if you don't have a yard, you could do something on your front porch with pots. So I have a little write-up here. And so this grant came across that, and these things always come out like, you know, apply tomorrow. So a description of the project is it would be demonstration and a hands-on workshop for the public on container planting using native plants. And the participants would be charged a nominal fee for supplies if they want to make something to take home. But as part of this workshop, planters would be created and then they would be located in public areas around the borough. Like could be a little grouping by Borough Hall, there could be a little grouping in a park, but these have to be in public spaces that would say, you know, here's a little grouping and you know, a little mini garden that is our native plants and pots and with some information about them. So this is the project that they're working towards. A grant came from the Pennsylvania Native Plant Society that might be able to help the costs of this particular activity. And the application, of course, is due February 15th, so that's before our next meeting. It appears that the grant application would require a statement from the borough agreeing to allow the planters to be in display on public property. That's basically what I got from meeting, and I'm assuming, Craig, you got the same thing. There's no financial obligation associated with the grant. There's nothing, you know, this is the only thing. It's like just the ability to use location.
They'll be watering though, right?
To take care of them once they're done. That hasn't been worked out yet in their plan, but they have to address how this, whatever this thing is, to be maintained. So I guess I had sent information to Craig and it looks like something Craig can sign. It appears, given the timing and everything, I guess it looks like, do we have to?
When we're discussing it tonight. I think if council is in favor of moving forward, we can, you know, informal. It's not on the agenda in any way, shape, or form, but you can give the assent, and then we can ratify it at the meeting. Since there's no financial obligation, that's the reason I'm okay.
No financial obligation. How long do they have to remain on this way?
Native plants never die.
Right.
Oh god.
Yeah.
I think
there is no there. This is just starting to be sketched out. But my assumption is that this would be for the coming growing season.
I think it's great. I just don't want to see a bunch of ratty pots.
Oh, no.
I'm interpreting Chris Amfar's question to be similar, which is flash out.
Bye.
Which is,
who's going to maintain them?
Who's going to maintain them and for how long?
Yeah.
Right.
And so if part of the grant is that they maintain it or part of the project, then.
Well, part of their application is how are they going to maintain it?
Go away. So.
Pardon. Yeah.
Yeah, Craig out there with a water can.
That hit him.
Yeah. I'm fine with exploring it.
Yeah,
scientists.
So we're okay. I think it's just like the approval to allow Craig to sign the thing that says, yeah, it's okay.
And then we'll put it on the agenda for 2 weeks to
okay.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Julia. Moving on to Turkerville.
We still have reopenings for our human relations
Benton. I have not received any additional applicants for our rec board. I did receive an applicant, Gina Maples. She's a family member here in the borough, has young kids, understands that that these events that the rec board puts on require work, and she's happy to step in and do work. So she's looking forward to, we choose to move her in for that position. And we now have one applicant for the vacancy board, that would be the vacancy chair, Diane, who has held this position in the post as well. She's happy to step up again. We did have another applicant, but that person has stepped out of the rate consideration. Yes.
All right, thank you. So those will be on our meeting in 2 weeks to vote on.
Can we wait that long? By law? It's okay.
Yes.
Oh, for the vacancy chair.
Yeah, I mean, we're here. The problem with the vacancy chair thing is if for some reason someone had to step off board and the rest of you couldn't decide on a replacement, it's just a precarious position to be in. But we're fine.
Like
one
day
fine. We're
okay.
All right, so moving on to old business, first to whenever.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. So, yeah, what came out of these meetings was interest in a couple of things, definitely three things. One being bringing back our consultant from the State Historical Commission. Was that where she was?
Yeah, I think she was from
PHS.
Yeah. To discuss again the options that we had and try to focus in on which ones we may want to consider pursuing in general. That was one thing. The second point was that before getting done or updating, if there has been one, a survey of properties in the borough but outside the historic district that may have particular historical interest to them, to identify those so that as we look at what tools we want to use, we have that data and that background in terms of what it is that which particular properties may be of special interest in preserving. And the third one is not that, so I'm going to use a word that I have no interest in at this time, but it was asked, right? So because there was also a concern about the number of, how much the borough is changing and whether or not with this change we are losing some of these assets. And whether or not, what is the borough's ability to have a moratorium while we look at these issues? And while I didn't express any interest in a moratorium, I did say that I would ask our solicitor what the standards were with respect to the potential of a moratorium.
There are no standards because a moratorium is not an option. Unfortunately, yes.
I appreciate that. So those were the three points that were brought up. And the first one I think is the easiest in terms of, well, actually the last one was the easiest. We got a clear answer. The first one is a phone call and like bring her to another meeting. And then the question being in terms of doing a survey, I think we have to look into who would do the survey, and obviously it's going to cost money that the borough would need to fund, but that's something that I personally would support, and I appreciate the Joint Historic Commission and Mark bringing up that thought.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a good idea. I don't know that we've ever done anything like that historically. I mean, I know we have the survey cards, but they aren't necessarily specific to outside the historic district or not.
They were done twice because he did the first one for the first historic, then the second one to expand the historic district.
And that the last time was what?
Oh, what? I don't 80s? Know. Early
yeah.
80s?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's a matter of, do we just look at the cards that already exist and or do we do it again?
Wait. Well, are there more historical buildings?
Yeah, now they're more like.
Wouldn't just be the same buildings?
Washington Village is now old enough to qualify.
I'm sorry?
Washington Village, which is not in the historic district, is old enough to qualify if they're 50 years old, which they are.
Yeah.
So you have to.
I think it's just vintage, not antique.
No, to have a historic district, you know, you have to have a certain percentage of buildings that are greater than 50 years old. Well, yeah. Most of the borough, mm-hmm. it's almost the entire borough would qualify as an historic district if you wanted to go that way. But
But to Tara's point, it's you can be antique or you can just be old.
Thanks.
I did not mean you. I think that there's a general acceptance here to push forward with looking into. So whatever you need to do that, let us know. Craig can help. But I think finding someone probably is the first step.
Perfect. Thank you.
Yeah.
And just curiosity, the moratorium's not an option because it's just an illegal thing.
There's no.
Right.
Moratorium. My attention was being drawn to an emerging issue, and I apologize. A moratorium is impossible. The regulations that we have are not really an outright stopping in any way, shape, or form. We know that all too well. But we can restrict people's rights. We can't completely take away their property rights, and a moratorium would essentially be temporarily, although completely taking away their property rights. It's just not an option.
Okay. The other topic under old business, Julia, we have the EV ordinance.
The EV ordinance, yes. So the purpose of an EV ordinance would be to regulate EV chargers for the benefit of the borough. And that we're recognizing that EVs are being used, being electric vehicles, are being used more and more by the public. And it's important that the borough's infrastructure keeps up with these times. And this is especially important now so that the borough gets what it wants with regard to EV charging readiness in new developments, such as Liberty Center. I've been looking into what all this means, and it's a big task. Mm-hmm. I sent you all an email outlining the areas that would be covered by such an ordinance. And this would be provision of EV chargers for private residential and non-residential multi-space parking lots and garages. For example, parking lots for townhouse developments or apartment buildings, commercial parking lots, parking structures. New construction of single or twin residences, and this would be like what kinds of rules do we want about being EV charger ready, not necessarily having them in there, but being equipped so they could. And then the last being personal EV chargers in the right of way. Then the second part of this would be permitting. So these are the main topics that the ordinance will address. There are a couple items that I wanted to get some feedback on as I'm working my way through writing this ordinance. Regard personal EV chargers in the right of way. And these are privately owned chargers that are at the street. We're not talking about something that's along someone's private driveway or in their garage. And typically when someone doesn't have the ability to have a driveway on-site parking for their house, they might be looking for having a charger at the street. So a level two charger, which is the type of charger that typically would be installed in this manner, require 240 volts usually at a high amperage, which if you get zapped by it, will fry you. That will kill you. So I'm asking if we all agree that for public safety reasons, the equipment that's installed in the right of way can only carry a live charge when it's actively charging a vehicle. Is there any?
How does that work? Do you have to flip a circuit breaker?
No. There are ways to do it. I'm working on that, but it can be done.
Okay.
So that's the first thing I'm asking, if anybody has any comment about that.
But the equivalent is that you're flipping a switch, even though you might be able to do it. like back at the, it probably comes from back at the house. So.
Well, the difference, like in an EV charge with a level two charger, the 240 volts goes to the apparatus, the, you know, the, I'm not using the correct terminology, I know, that the thing, okay? And then the cord comes out and you plug it into your car. There's no charge in that cord. The charge is being controlled at the thing. Yeah. So the charge of 240 volts is always going here, but it doesn't go any further. If you're plugged into your car then talks to this thing and says, send me the 240 volts. So during that time when it's actually plugged in and charging, and that at a point at which the car says, okay, I'm full, I've had enough, it communicates back and turns it off. Also, if anything, if you hit it, if you knock it, if something disturbs that connection, it automatically shuts off. So whatever's between that charger thingy and the car would have... Charging station, yeah.
Question. Obviously, yes, it's a safety issue. What is, and you may not have gotten to this point yet, but what is the difference, the cost to a homeowner who has to park on the street, who wants to do this, to install something like that versus just a regular charger that has power going to it all the time? Like, how, is it easily done? Is it expensive? Is it...
Every EV charger is expensive. They're all expensive.
Definitely, because right now you have the charging station, you've got these poles and they're sitting in your driveway or wherever. And like you explained, you're coming from the house to there.
You still have to run a line.
You have to run that line. And to automatically turn that off if you're not connected to a car is a technology I don't think it's there yet.
So I guess let me rephrase my question.
Would you
agree? That's
the
way mine functions.
Would having this
the way
requirement
that's the way it functions.
Make it almost impossible for most people to do this?
No, I don't think so.
My other question.
Can I just clarify one thing?
Yeah.
So the way you described it, from the house to the charging station.
There's power always going to the charging station, but if you were to touch the
port
that goes into the car, there is no electric
100%
current at that site until it's connected and locked, and that's when the energy flows.
Right.
So I knew your question. They're all having an electric vehicle and a level two charger at home. They're all expensive. There is no cheap option. I think the safer options, if I can make a suggestion, are the ones that are enabled that way, but also ones that are Wi-Fi enabled, because you can set it that they're and ensure that they're not charging at any particular time. Mm-hmm. And the ones that are located in the right of way, which I think is a conversation council has to have about how we do those and the other ancillary documents that would be required as part of that process to keep the borough from being responsible for anybody who locates anything in our right of way, would be to make sure they meet those standards.
So if they're off and there's no white electric charge, even in the charging unit box, like, so if a car hits it, for example, if a car strikes it, then...
If you're charging your car.
No. Like, the car's... Like, if it's still in the box, if it's still going under the sidewalk...
There's electric to the box.
Yeah, and then a car hits it because a car loses control. The driver loses control of the car.
Yes.
And then could that, you know, cause somebody to be electrocuted? Yeah.
So that's what I'm working on right now.
Right.
So rather to continue and discuss all the details about how it would be designed or what those options are... The research that they'll be doing is it is possible to do this. So I think that I just wanted to make sure that you were aware of this and that you would agree with me that we really don't want to have something that's constantly charged that is in the right of way. You don't want something there that someone could hit and get zapped by this. We want it to be so that there is no charge in the right of way unless it's attached to a car.
Because are you saying it's always live?
No, it's live to the box.
Yeah.
Live to the box.
Yes. Yes. So,
so if somebody else were to come up with their charger, they could theoretically plug in.
Well, it doesn't kind of work
that
way.
They have to lock it. They have to
We have to have some kind of lock.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's right.
Regardless, this is a safety
kind of, right? Yeah, we're kind of getting
to get ahead of.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, we could talk about, I mean, we don't have anything to
Yeah,
talk
I think, yeah, actually, I think at some point, this, yeah, they have to.
Clearly underground. Okay. I have no problem with you including
right.
that.
Okay, all right. Any, all right, so obviously there'll be more discussion later, particularly when this, you know, we actually see what.
So start by erring on the side of including what you want to include,
right.
And we'll go
right. Okay, all right, that's good.
I have a question.
Sorry.
It's just about, in general, the safety parameters, because these things are showing up in these charging stations in parking lots where there's a lot of traffic. I mean, I don't know about you, but I mean, there's a lot of accidents that happen unintentionally in a parking lot. I can just imagine this being a huge hassle, people dinging these electric cords from time to time. So I think that there's got to be some sort of mechanism built into the chargers that are accounting for this type of dilemma, like what happens if a car accidentally rolls into the charger. So I'm wondering if we're really trying to go out of the way to make sure that this wire is live or not live or whatever the
Well, I think what I just wanted to say is that if we agree that we don't want to have a live power and in the right of way when there isn't charge happening, that then I think the discussion about how that is accomplished is for a later date. Okay. But, and the things in the middle of parking lots, you know, they also have steel bollards and all things around them, so you can't run into the machine and all, but I think we're kind of getting a little ahead of ourselves here, but certainly I understand what you're saying.
Right.
Yeah, and these are all things to think of, because they're thinking like, you know what, you have something in the right of way, someone's either going to hit or trip or run into, or a car, I don't know.
If the car's charging, right?
But if the car is charging and there's a disruption, it automatically turns off.
But not to that.
Yeah, fault. That's why you.
And I see, but that's the concern.
That's the concern.
So there's nothing you can do about that.
Yeah. All right. Well, all these things are being considered. Okay.
You have more?
Yes, I do.
Keep going then.
We're going to move on. I'm getting away from 240 volts. I'm getting away from that. All right. Reserve parking. That's the second one. Okay. So we need to consider whether having a personal charger at the street would require a reserved parking space. And the ordinances I have reviewed have offered the following options. The PennDOT model ordinance, which is a really good model ordinance, states that there is no reserve spot. Philadelphia, and then Craig could speak to this, originally permitted a reserve spot for EV charging, but has since terminated this option. Other ordinances have permitted reserve parking overnight only. And then things to think about is to consider how a reserve spot or a reserve parking space might affect the availability of public street parking in neighborhoods where there's little or no off-street parking for residents, which is the type of neighborhood where personal chargers in the right-of-way would be desired. So these are things I'm kind of throwing them out there and just kind of get your thoughts. There's nothing to be concluded this evening, but we should be talking about it.
Well, regardless of whether you have an electric vehicle or not, you're going to have a car. And if you don't have a driveway, which is the only reason you'd be putting a charger on the street, you still have a car. So you still have to be parking. So it's not like you're some new car is coming into the area to take a spot. You still would have had a car anyway. So I'm not.
But do you get a special spot in front of your
house?
No,
I don't think you get a special spot.
Yeah, you can't. It means you can't. Your car can't eat that night. I mean, you can't park by your thing that you installed, you know.
That's where I was going to go. So beyond the technical issues with safety, and I appreciate those, and I appreciate your work on them, this question about whether they're going to be reserved spaces or not, it's still, to me, it's good. Well, there's a bunch of challenges here with respect to ownership, whether it's real, whether it's legal ownership, or just I put that charger there, I can't believe somebody else is parked there. It's important that we maintain. So there's that issue, which is everybody needs to be able to park, use the spaces that are there, and there's going to be a sense of ownership, and then a sense of frustration, I think, from residents who aren't able to use these chargers that they've spent the money on. So that's going to be a challenge. I think the maintenance of them and the visual noise of them in a community such as ours is also something to be taken into consideration. So I think the goal is laudable. I think we just have to think that there's going to be repercussions and unanticipated consequences that we also have to take into consideration before we go too far with this.
Okay. Should we also be considering public charging stations? I mean, we have a parking lot here that is a municipal lot. We have other municipal lots. Should we be also, while we're doing this, consider the possibility of installing charging stations that we can make money off of?
Interesting you should ask that, because I just asked this question at our LCAP meeting today, because I said, because we are talking about EV charging as part of this conversation, and I asked the students to look into what the relative value to the communities might be. So, for example, given a town like Newtown, where most people are going to want to charge at home, but there are going to be some people who won't be able to, is the usage of a public charger going to be high enough? Is the demand going to be high enough to meet the costs of putting them in? And there is money to do this, to put in municipal charging.
State money, federal money, not our money.
Oh. Well, right. You know, there's money that came in to do this. There's money out there to do it. The question is, and yes, we should be putting chargers in our public lots for sure. And then there are other plans where you put a charger at the end of a street and then everybody can use it or something like that. I mean, there are all different ways of doing it. The question is the demand high enough for the borough of this size to do it?
And that's the first person question. To do it. I'm still plugging my 110 to charge my phone. So I'd be
like a level two, as opposed to going to Wawa and
I go to Wawa there, Wedman, now.
Yeah. So there's a bunch of chargers right where in La Stalla, in front of La Stalla.
Yeah, they're gone.
Yeah,
they're gone.
They were private.
They were private.
But it appears that the cost of putting it in is a flat cost. The maintenance, I think, is what really gets you when you're using it a lot in a public space. We really need to understand what the maintenance costs are going to be for that. Just to know.
Yeah. And there are companies that work with the municipality. Like the municipality doesn't even own the chargers. They have a deal with, not even ChargePoint. There are ones that do specifically for municipalities, and I forgot the names of the ones that were thrown around, but that they do it. And then, you know, you just...
I think there are plenty of opportunities there, because I remember when we had the loaner from BMW a couple years ago, they had mentioned that they, if we, you know, move forward with the vehicle, they would install chargers in like the municipal lot. So I think there's a lot of opportunity.
Yeah.
One thing when you were talking about the 240 volt for the residential right of way, it has to be very clear to them that they have to bore down and go underneath the sidewalk and in.
Yes.
And that's, I had to get that done at my house, and it's not cheap.
I know.
It's the cost of the charger.
Yeah. You can't lay a cord across the
and
sidewalk.
It has to be very, very clear.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes. No cords on the sidewalk.
Okay. Thank you for that, Julia.
Sure. So I'm continuing to work on this. So if you have any thoughts, things you want, we could just email.
Yeah. So the Bucks County EV charging station model ordinance, which is great for public use and all of that. It doesn't really handle our problem with the residential one.
Right.
But for the rest of it, it's great. They had a picture here of on light posts and on it seems really like solve a lot of problems. I mean, you know what? It wasn't on this. There's another one in the Bucks County Planning Commission, which is another thing on the EV chargers. And they have these chargers, you have the poles and everything, but then they have ones that connect exactly to a light pole.
Yeah, I've seen
there's
it,
chargers there.
Yeah.
So the cost of it's down, boring underneath your sidewalks.
Is the power drawn down?
That's municipal. That's municipal.
Right. Well, if we're looking to do
municipal are not going to have to go into the sidewalk. They do something else, right?
But there's a lot of nice options to do it, like to put it in different places that aren't traditionally the way we've seen them.
Right.
Okay. Great.
Sure.
Thanks, Julia.
Okay. Sure.
Another piece of old business.
Okay.
Who I forgot to mention the first one. Also at the hard meeting, we had a discussion about the retaining wall in the front yard of Court Street. And I just wanted to report on that. HARP is willing to look at the application, which they kind of passed on before. I'm not sure whether I got from them that they would then provide us a formal recommendation or they would provide further comments to us, but detailed comments. And that's the letter that they received, they didn't really take in the right spirit. But
did you say that?
China wrote it, so I'm sure it was nice.
Any letter felt like Big Brother. Okay.
Yeah.
So
they should have a Big Brother.
Nevertheless. So, but they can't tell the applicant what to do, right? It's going to be up to the applicant to take the comments that they've heard, perhaps from us, perhaps from HARB so far, and present something that hopefully that can be reviewed by HARB, and then we would get those comments.
Yeah, I mean, we're asking HARB to review it again and make a formal recommendation. That's not a
We're asking them to review what was already applied for.
Yes, we're asking them to make a formal recommendation on the application that came in front of us that they didn't make a recommendation on. That's what we're asking.
I think what we're going to get is detailed minutes as opposed to a recommendation.
That they don't have a choice. Council is asking them to make a formal recommendation. They are a committee of council. They must make a formal recommendation.
Like, what would they like to see there?
No,
if they don't,
it's like any other application. I don't know why this is.
The letter said borough council is remanding the application back to HARB to issue a formal recommendation. Borough council requests a recommendation that consists of HARB's assessment of what changes, if any, HARB may have required had the retaining wall not already been constructed, and a recommendation on the submitted certificate of appropriateness application.
And then once they make a formal recommendation, it will come in front of us, and we will make our decision. And then from there, either, you know, we work with works with the residents on how to fix the situation before there's a violation notice, you know, but the recommendation has to come.
I'll make sure that happens.
So it would,
didn't happen at the last
meeting. It will need to be on the agenda, though.
Yeah.
Okay. Any other old business?
Wait.
Any announcements? Any public to be heard?
No, Charles Schwartz, 323 Washington Avenue. I want to open up with a personal feeling. I've never been more embarrassed for the borough. A new town than I have been in the past 2 weeks. From the standpoint of the way the borough has reacted to the snow that has come out, it is an abomination that the streets in Newtown are not clean, that roads and streets that are two-way are not able to be two-way because of the snow pile up on the side that has not been removed. The second thing that I want to reiterate to is a snow emergency. I've established them as a former mayor many times. That is a process that is done with the mayor, the chief of police, the fire marshal, to determine when a snow emergency should be done. It was done this time by mayor. And from that standpoint, anything that is over and above, once the snow starts, decision is usually to be made by those people. From removing the snow, whether you do it by the plow, curb to curb, you do it plow to plow the right of way, or you truck it out. Our street person, Scott's all season, is the contract person that does the borough streets. From that standpoint, he did the plowing. I understand that he was told that they are not going to truck or plow out the sidewalk, the areas they cannot plow streets into putting it back onto the sidewalks. So it has to be done with a front end loader, putting it on a truck, and dumping it within the sewer authority that we have a contract with or an agreement with that puts the snow down at the sewer authority. I had to have that done because our street, Lincoln Avenue, was not done. My neighbor did call the manager, and he did get a phone call back saying that he would send someone over to help alleviate the situation because he does not have a driveway. The gentleman, two people showed up with a pickup truck to try to do that 2 days after the snow. And it was people that are doing the maintenance on the streets and dumping trash. I forget their name, I'm sorry from that standpoint. But anyway, they showed up and they were going to do the cleaning of his driveway, and they couldn't budge anything because it was a 110 F-150 pickup truck with a snowplow in front. And of course, everything that had been frozen by that time, he couldn't do anything. So I asked him why he was there, and he said he was told by the manager to come down and take a look at this process. To me, that's a violation of Scott's contract. Scott is the one that's supposed to be doing the snow removal and the plowing and the maintenance of the streets. I have understood that that was something that was requested by the manager for them to go up and take a look at it. They weren't able to do anything. So I was had to go take care of things myself. Dump the snow, put it into a truck, take it down and dump it to the sewer authority. So now we are at a point where we still have another couple more days where we're going to have freezing weather. Nothing is going to get done. I saw two people almost get hit crossing at 8th Street and Center Avenue walking across from Washington, from the First National Bank. And they were walking across the crosswalk and they couldn't be seen because of the high amount of snow that was there. So from my standpoint, as a former mayor, lifelong borough resident, I have never been more embarrassed with borough to be in this position at this time frame after a snow emergency was declared and nothing has been done. Thank you all for this. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Any additional public to be heard? Okay, I will entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Do I have a second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Any nays? Vote passes. Thank you, everybody.
A question. I saw the minutes from the last meeting.
Yes. I did. Yes. 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 Yes.